Valley with Tony Simpson, Ryan Champion and Jack Bennion.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally. It's quite exciting. I'm in my new studio. I'm in my little room in my new house. It's sat in my seat with the PlayStations and everything around me. I've got my laptop on and all the studio bits and pieces around that. And I've also got Jack Bennion there.
Hello.
And I've also got Ryan Champion there. He's done that on purpose. Ryan Champion.
I'm here.
Ryan Champion, you ruined a perfectly good intro. How dare you? How dare
Sorry.
You? Just because you haven't got a fan club. Mind you, neither is Jack now. We've just been discussing that, of course. Unfortunately, the Jack Bennion fan club is no more, folks. And if you have started following it and you've noticed it's disappeared, it was due to image rights issues, which Jack had brought up. And that's all we can say on it at the moment. It's gone legal. But there you go. Anyway, welcome to the third episode of Absolute Rally and Season 5. Now, Episode 1 and 2 were strong. Probably two of the strongest we've had for some time. Episode 3 may feel like a little bit of anti-climax, it has to be said. So everyone who's involved is going to have to raise the game, boys. That's all I'm going to say to you. So you need to be absolutely on your mettle. And, so there you go. We always start the programme, as I'm sure you know now, in chronological order. We always go to the Bible, we always go to MN, and we also always get Jack Bennion to give us a walk through the headlines. And we know people appreciate this, so we thought we'd do it. So,
except his fan club.
It was fan club. Now, I'll be honest with you, right? I think he's been incredibly brave. I think you getting an injunction, Jack, may have pushed them the other way. You know, you get these like crazy stalker type.
Yeah, I think they'll be back. Mm. I think they'll be back bigger and better.
I think they'll be back, but with a bit of an edge to them.
Can you not start a campaign to bring back the Jack Bennion fan club? Because that was really upsetting.
I think you've actually just said it. I think you actually just said those immortal words that both Ryan and I were thinking. Anyway, boys, it's tarmac heaven this weekend. We've got Germany and we've got Ulster. So we'll start with Germany and then we'll work our way backwards because we're going to go through the headlines. Now, finally, Ogier relishes even keel, Jack.
Yeah, Sebastian's given our man David Evans some words about how excited he is to be on tarmac. It obviously sort of eradicates that issue he's had with the running order for the past few gravel rallies. I think it's Sweden now. His weight's been been a long way, hasn't it, since we've seen him win. So he thinks he's got a great chance, and you know, you'd be hard to bet against him, wouldn't you, on this one?
I think so, right. He's going to have to bit between his teeth, and he's going to go out to prove the point, surely.
I don't think he needs an awful lot of encouragement on tarmac anyway, does he? You know, he isn't the multiple world champion for no reason. He's been dominant on tarmac. He's definitely going to take some beating. It's obviously Volkswagen's home rally as well, so one that they have a lot of guests at. One that hasn't been kind to them in the past, so I'm sure he'll be keen to to win that one. And it's difficult to see him not winning, but let's hope that there is a bit of a threat.
I suppose when you kind of take a look around the service park and you look across, and you know where is the threat going to come from? You know, Chris has been that kind of, you know, obviously there was a few things said about running orders and things like that, but Chris has been really the only one that's probably really needled him and Hayden, and of course Hayden's still working on his tarmac driving, and I just don't see it coming from anywhere else, Jack. I don't know about you. I look around, maybe Danny Sordo on his day we'll have a few quick stages, but on the whole, it's got to be a walk in the park for him, hasn't it?
Well, it looks like that, doesn't it? But I think if to play devil's advocate, I think Thierry Neuville is someone we should be looking at this weekend. He's a past winner on the event, and he's someone who scored a podium on Monte Carlo. Granted, Monte Carlo conditions are a little bit different, and we had a lot of snow and ice this year, didn't we? But that car getting a podium on its debut was pretty impressive with Thierry behind the wheel, and I think they've probably... But you'd like to think they've done some work on the car since then, considering it's a new car and they've worked on the tarmac pace before this rally. So I think Thierry is definitely someone else to watch as well.
Interesting point, Jack. Now I'm going to come to Ryan straight away. One thing that came out after Finland, obviously, both Thierry and Hayden were complaining about the track on the rear of the car. And Jack just made a point there. They surely must be still developing the tarmac setup for this car. I can't see anybody developing anything now.
I guess we haven't really seen how good this car is on tarmac yet, have we? Let's hope it is very competitive on tarmac. We haven't seen its full potential. So, yeah, you're probably right. After this event, they're probably not going to do an awful lot of tarmac development. But you would have thought that, you know, up until quite recently, they're going to work on the tarmac setup because they've got the tarmac events to come. Again, let's not forget it's sort of Hyundai's second home rally, isn't it? It's their local event as well, based in Germany. We'll see how good the car is on tarmac. It should be good, but will it be good enough to beat a Volkswagen?
Jack, are you getting any whispers from any of the camps at the moment with regards to testing this current spec car? Because obviously everything we see now is about 2017. Everything is kind of, 2016 I think could almost go down as a non-event year the way things are going, because everything is about 2017.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I thought it was quite interesting looking at VW's testing. I saw some videos from that, and Jari Matti was out in the 2016 car, wasn't he? And so was Sebastian. And as far as I know, in the past few events, they've been using the 2017 car to do their pre-event testing, and Citroën certainly have. But it was quite interesting to see that VW had taken a 2016 car with them on their test for Germany. So it looks like they're really taking things seriously. I haven't seen any videos from any of the other pre-event tests, so I'm not sure if they've done the same thing, or whether that's just a Volkswagen sort of, we want to win our home event type thing, and they're really pushing the boat out and testing.
I was interested in what, I think it was when Chris Meek was with us the other week, he was saying that apparently the Volkswagen boys are not finding an easy transition from the 2016 to the 17 and then back to the 16 car. So I don't know whether there's something in that as well, perhaps, as you say, trying to perhaps focus themselves for Germany and not have too much thoughts about next year's car. But news that's just broke, and we're talking within the last hour or so, moving away from Germany just briefly, is with regards to China. Now, obviously, there's a headline today, Jack, China's WRC round in doubt, but we now know that's pretty much it's happened. There's a few cynical views that I've seen already on social media and things like that, but that's now confirmed it's a non-event.
Yeah, it's been confirmed. It's been cancelled. There's a statement released by the promoter and FIA, so that'll be one that's not going ahead. There's been a lot of work going on behind the scenes, and you know, our story kind of charts the progress of what's been going on. And Michelle Mouton and a representative of the promoter have been out there trying to do everything they can to make the event come together. I think it might be a week or two before we hear the proper reasons behind it. We've just got the statement at the minute. Maybe not the proper reasons, maybe that's the wrong thing to say, but maybe there's some other things to come out yet with this story.
Right, I think you were questionable, I think it's fair to say, on social media earlier when the story broke. It was a lot of facial expressions but no real words. So I'm going to ask you for words now, because facial expressions won't work on a podcast.
Oh, really? I was trying to pull them all then. Firstly, it's bad for the championship, isn't it? You know, WRC's a very professional sport, and you know, to see events cancelled obviously isn't ideal. But then the reasons behind it, certainly the floods look to have been horrendous. It sounds like, you know, there has been a lot of roads washed away there. There had been doubts about the rally even before that, you know, from a financial point of view, which was exactly the reason it was cancelled in 2000. It's definitely a shame for the championship, though, because, well, the manufacturers wanted to go to China, didn't they? It's the biggest car market, the biggest expanding car market in the world, and they all need to sell their cars in there. And for WRC not to be in China is certainly a shop window they're missing. So, it's an unfortunate situation all around, really.
Jack, obviously you get whispers of things, and obviously we all hear things and everything else. And I haven't spoke to anybody that was adamant this event was ever going to run.
Yeah, I think there's always been doubts, hasn't there? But you know, we've seen that events with before. That's not really a new thing, I don't think. But I think there has been a lot of words said about this event, and you know, it's a shame that it's not come off. And you know, the reason been given is storm damage. So at the minute, taking it on the face of it, you know, it's nothing that could have been predicted looking back. But, you know, like I say, maybe there's more to come out of this story, and maybe some of those people who were suggesting the event wasn't going to go ahead a few months ago had some other things to base their sort of facts on. But at the minute, I think you've just got to go off the statement that they've put out.
Craig Breen was also very quick. If we can quote Craig, Craig just tweeted a lovely picture of I'm just trying to find it now as I'm speaking to you. He basically said about Rally China, weather is fine up in Knockeller at this time of year. Just saying, bring back rally into Ireland. And a lovely shot of him sideways in a Mark II, if you want to go and search that out, folks. But there you go. Listen, just coming back to Germany. One man, is it? The reason why I'm kind of quizzical about before I start this next section is the fact that I always go to call him Sebastian, and then I remember that his name is Stefan, because I've been corrected several times on that. Stefan Lefebvre funds own drive for Rally Germany to prove pace. Jack, just tell us a little bit about this one.
Yeah, so, you know, kind of what you've just said there really is Lefebvre has funded his own drive in Rally Germany. It's not one that the Abu Dhabi team were planning on attending, but, you know, Lefebvre's put his own deal together to go out, and you could argue, maybe reading between the lines, that, you know, you had Craig Breen on last week, and you know, this may be a bit of a reaction to that. He needs to go out and sort of do something to react to Breen's podium. And, you know, there's no doubt Breen's riding the crest of a wave at the minute, and Lefebvre needs to do something if he wants to be the other driver at Citroën next year with Chris Meek. So it'd be interesting to see how he gets on in Germany. And, you know, he's said his dream would be to get a podium, but he'd be satisfied with fourth or fifth. But, you know, I think he'll definitely be looking at a podium this weekend if he wants to, you know, kind of curb that enthusiasm for Craig that's going on at the minute.
This isn't anything new, really, is it, Ryke? You know, I take my hat off to him a little bit. You know, you remember when you think back to I suppose the halcyon days of, you know, 80s, 90s for me, and you remember drivers going out. I remember Tommy Mäkinen, for instance, doing Thousand Lakes Finland in an Escort Cosworth and things like that, just one-off drives and just putting deals together to make sure they're in that shop window.
Yeah, and Craig Breen, you just mentioned, Craig did the same in a Fiesta a couple of years back as well. He's obviously keen to get out there, show how quick he is. The Citroën works very well on tarmac, we know that. I saw a picture of it earlier on. It's a similar livery to how the cars ran last year with the black and green on the car. It'll be interesting to see where he ends up, because obviously to finish in the top five as he's aiming for, the three Volkswagens will be there or thereabouts, won't they? The two Hyundais are going to be around the top five. It'll be interesting to see how the Fords get on. I mean, I know M Sport are keen that car shows its pace on tarmac, so it'll not be easy for him to finish in the top five, but if he could do, then obviously that's you know, it's a good reminder of what he can do, and an important time for his career looking at next year.
I guess then where I'm going to go next with this one is an age thing. There's a little bit of a side story here, sidebar story, Jack, with regards to Bernardo Sousa, somebody who I spoke about quite a bit when we were talking about the DMAC Drive Trophy and when we did the run through with Gus and I spoke to John Armstrong as well. You know, he was one of the drivers. He's been around WRC2. He drove Super 2 cars and things like that. I think this is kind of it's quite a sad story, really, and I don't know whether it's a knee jerk, but tell us a little bit about the story anyway.
Yeah, so Bernardo Sousa has announced his retirement from rallying after a sponsor pulled out before Rally Germany, so he's not got the money together to do the event. It's the first of a two-round scoring system, isn't it, with the Drive DMAC Trophy between Germany and Spain at the end of the year. Someone will win two drives in an R5 car next year, the person with the most points from these two rounds. So yeah, it's a shame to see Bernardo not do it. You know, we were shocked to see him enter in the first place, weren't we, this year, after, you know, you've just alluded to him driving WRC2 and Super 2 cars and things like that. Seemed a bit of a step down, but maybe, you know, he thought it was a good chance to relaunch his career. But unfortunately, you know, sponsors like this, you know, it happens at all levels of rallying, and you know, not so much at WRC level anymore, but you know, sad to see him not, you know, not have that opportunity for the rest of the year.
Yeah, very much so, very much so. And I just hope, I don't know really, right, I suppose we've all been there, and obviously at various levels and everything else, where, you know, perhaps you've lost some support and things like that, and you've kind of gone, right, well, that's it, and then you kind of find yourself lulled back in again. Do you think it's a knee-jerk, or do you see somebody like Bernardo just, you know, I don't know what more he could have done anyway. You know, you think about the programs that he's had, he's basically what he was driving for this year, he's had those type of programs, hasn't he?
Yeah, he has. And, you know, it's like any driver that's competing at this level wants to do the job properly. And the only way to do the job properly is to have the funds in place to do it. And, yeah, maybe it is a little bit knee-jerk reading it. You know, he's frustrated that he wants to go out and compete, and the money isn't there to do it. We expected him to be, you know, very quick this year with his experience, which he has been. The results maybe haven't gone quite his way, but it's certainly a shame, and it's just a reminder of how much this sport revolves around sponsorship. You know, it's so much money involved in doing anything, particularly at world level, but also at national level as well. And yeah, it's just a reminder that you can't do it without the backing.
Yeah, very, very frustrating for him. Very frustrating. Now, boys, before we go on, I'm gonna give you options, because we're gonna have a section coming up very shortly with Chris Rawls. So we did it as a two-parter. Chris was on last week talking to us about Rally Poland, and he's involved with the radio for Ulster Rally, and also obviously he does ERC radio as well. Now we're gonna have Zav, was also part of his radio crew, who's chomping at a bit, who's going to be talking to us a little bit later on in the podcast. But do you want to do your any other business now, or do you want to do it all together with Zav at the end of the podcast?
I'm easy, I don't mind. You know me, Tony.
You know you're easy, Jack.
There you go.
Yeah. How about you, Ryan?
Oh, I'm happy to do it now, if you'd like to do it.
Well,
now.
I'll tell you what, the reason why is because I want to talk about Ulster. There's lots of other little bits and pieces that I want to talk about. So while I'm kind of working on those things, you give you any other business.
All right. Well, my any other business this week is a man who, what, probably 3 or 4 years ago looked like he was the real deal. He was a man who was winning on gravel, winning on tarmac rallies, won the IRC. Forerunner to ERC, and that's Juho Hänninen. He looked incredible in the Skoda team as a Super 2000 driver, then moved to effectively did a few rallies with M Sport before in a private car before going to the Hyundai team. Now we hear talk of Hänninen coming back next year with Tommi Mäkinen's Toyota team. He had a full year with Hyundai, and really the results just didn't go his way. He was quick at time to time, but you know, he just had a lot of issues, a couple of accidents, that kind of thing. What do we think Juho Hänninen could achieve? Is he a driver who hasn't quite achieved his full potential yet in a WRC car, or is he somebody who's not quite at the front running pace in a WRC car? I'd be interested to see what people listening think. But I'll throw it to you guys. What do you think?
Go on, Jack. I've got a thought. Go on.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, that one, isn't it? I don't think we've really, you know, I think, first of all, that obviously depends on how good the Toyota is next year and whether it's a front-running car. I don't think he's really had the opportunity at the front of the WRC to have a proper crack at it, has he? So, you know, it would be nice to see him in a WRC car properly, but I think he's got to be in a front-running car for that for him to prove how good he is, really, I think, if that kind of makes sense.
Absolutely. Now, my thoughts, and this could be slightly controversial, I actually rate Juho Hänninen very, very highly, and I think he's very underrated. He did a lot of the original, I think he did a lot of clicks in the Hyundai from a testing point of view, prior to the team coming through. And we've been championing the fact, and I'm not putting him on the same level at the moment, but he was at one point, you know, Ryan's just made reference to the fact of where he was in IRC, and it was him and Chris Meek. And where I'm going with this is the fact that we've all been really excited about the fact that the Citroën team has been kind of working with Chris, and Chris has been at the beginning. Juho Hänninen will have been in this car from the beginning as well, along with Tommi Mäkinen, and obviously Mika Hirvonen has done some bits and pieces, but the person who's done most of the clicks in the car, from what I understand, is Juho Hänninen. So in many ways, he has got no excuses. And I think it's pretty much confirmed he does have a program for next year. He's doing all the recce's this year, and he's doing all the testing in the new car. It's not like he's doing anything in a 2015 or a 2016 car. All his driving is competitive, or not really competitive driving, but all his fast driving in a rally car in a 2017 Toyota WRC. So I think he could be a cheeky outside bet to upset a few people.
It'd just be interesting to see if he can find some consistency again, because that's what he didn't seem to have in the year in the Hyundai. And yet, as we just talked about, when he was in the Super 2000 car, he was, you know, brilliant on tarmac and gravel. Let's not forget he beat Freddie Leix in Ypres, for example. He's a very quick driver on tarmac, and I think that'll be the key for him, if he can find some consistency. And then we'll see. Can he has he got front running pace at WRC level in a WRC car? I think it's still a question that he hasn't answered.
Okay. A couple of things I want to, before we go to a break, and before we get Zav involved and we start talking about Ulster, I just want to talk about the DMAC Drive Trophy. Obviously, we've got Gus Greensmith, who's kind of been our man. We've had John Armstrong. Now, John did a hell of an appeal to get out there, and obviously I don't know whether any of you guys seen the images, I'm sure you did, from the off on Finland. It didn't look like he was going to get there, and a lot of people dug deep and got John back out there. And John's always been, from when I've known him, from when he first started, he's always been a man that's always had to graft for budget and everything else. And the car's always a bit of a billboard at times, but it's got him out there. And just fair play to John. And he's a very, very quick boy on tarmac. I think it's going to be fascinating to see how he goes in Germany. And I think my any other business is kind of connected to the DMAC Drive Trophy, and also to all the other R2 drivers, Ossian Price, of course, and John Armstrong. Oscar Solberg as well, and I don't know whether you boys have been keeping an eye on him. Oscar Solberg's been very, very steady. He's been very, very steady in his in so far this year. I don't think he's troubled too many people. By the same token, his pace is gradually grown, and there you go. But where I'm going with my any other business is the battle of the Brits and Irish on Germany. And of course, one man who also battled for budget was another man of ours, was Chris Ingram. And Chris battled to raise the funds to go out as part of the Opel team to go and do Rally Germany. And I just think it's going to be fascinating. The Adam is very, very quick on tarmac, we know. Obviously, Chris will be having his own battle. Oshan will be having his own battle with Gus and with John and things like that. But I'm sure there'll be a glance across at times and everything else. And I think it's going to be fascinating, boys. I really, really do think there's a battle and a story waiting to be told that perhaps it's not really everyone's aware of yet.
I think Germany's going to be a really interesting one from an R2 point of view. One thing I would suggest is that the pace of Chris and Marianne Griebel, his teammate, are going to be quite a bit quicker than the DMAC guys. Mainly looking at last year, Griebel, I think, retired and was still 3 minutes ahead of anybody else who was in an R2 car in Germany, if you look at the results. So he was absolutely dominant last year, and I think that's maybe down to Pirelli tyres a little bit for... Well, they will be on Pirelli tyres this year, but the DMAX have improved quite a bit, I think, over the past year. I think people I've spoke to have said that, we all know where they started, but they've improved a lot, so they might be a bit closer this year. But I still think Chris and Marianne are going to be quite a bit ahead of the DMAX guys, but they'll be definitely having a fight between them, and it'll be interesting to see out the Brits who's the strongest on tarmac.
Yeah, Is tarmac a level awry? You've been around it and done a lot more than me. Is it a leveler, or is it a case of gravel kind of levels it out and things like that? Because obviously you've got two very different cars there, haven't you?
Yeah, I'd say if anything that the gravel is probably, it depends on the actual gravel rally, but gravel is a little bit more of a leveler, because you can, the driver probably has a little bit more percentage wise input over the car, whereas on tarmac, it is all about the performance of the car, the power that the car's got, the torque of the car. And if you're fundamentally up against a faster car, then it's difficult to make that difference up on tarmac. tarmac, whereas you sometimes can on gravel, particularly if it's a twisty gravel rally, for example. So I do think tarmac's going to be a little bit more down to the car, but like you said, it'll be an interesting battle.
Anyway, there you go. So I'm going to be watching that, and as I say, I just can't wait for this week. I'm actually, it's one of those few WRC rounds where I'm more interested in what's going on towards the back of the field than what I am at the sharp end, because I think, but as we said at the top of the programme, it's very much a foregone conclusion, barring a mechanical or perhaps a mistake that Seb probably going to have it all his own way. So you start looking in the rest of the field, and you start looking for these battles. It's only when I started looking further back and you see what's out there and you go, wow, this is going to be an interesting one. But there you go. Right, folks, I think this is where we'll go to a little bit of a break. In fact, no, we'll go to a break. Then we're going to go to Chris Rawls, who's going to tell us all about how radio works in rallying. He's one of the brain. He was one of the brains behind the original WRC radio. And obviously now Rawcast is his company. He's looking after the stuff on ERC. And he's also doing the radio coverage, of course, for Ulster this coming weekend, which is going to keep us all in touch with rallying on the Ulster rally. So we're going to have Chris talking to us about that. And then we're going to come back with the final section with the man who's going to be doing the radio with him, who's going to do a little bit of a preview, and we're going to have a little bit of a chinwag about Ulster Rally, Zav McCartan. So sit back, relax, listen to what Chris has got to say, because it is fascinating, and then we'll come back with Zav.
This is Absolute Rally. Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate, we can cater for individuals, teams or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally and classic touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks, accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate. Call Dane or Donna now on 44 1904 766787 or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
And welcome back to Absolute Rally. And it's welcome to, I consider all our guests a friend of the show, but Chris is somebody I've known for a long time. Chris Rawls from Rawcast, and the man whose voice you'll probably recognise from ERC Radio, along with Julesy. Chris is normally there at stage end as well. And we'll take you for granted. We take Rally Radio for granted. I think we all do now, obviously. WRC's got it, ERC's got it. But you were pretty much involved with it, certainly from the technology side of it, and also a very good friend of mine who was probably your junior at the point we made reference to, of course, James Muir, who does sometimes listen to our podcast. So
I have to say hello to James.
I salute you at this point. Yeah, hello, James. But James and I were talking about this, obviously not on air, because he no longer does on air stuff, but we had a bit of a catch-up the other week, and we were talking about how Rally Radio works, and I thought, you know what? Yeah. Now is the time to get somebody who was involved with it very, very early on and is still kind of behind it as well. And that's something else now. ERC Radio, and obviously previously you were involved with WRC Radio. We take it for granted. Just how difficult, I ask this question because I know a story which I'll talk to you about in a second.
Oh, right.
Just
okay.
How difficult is it to produce something which, you know, it can be cup and string at times, but because of location and because of signals and things like that, how does it all work?
Well, ERC Radio is normally on a wing and a prayer. No, it's not. No, or Rally Radio is normally bolted together on a wing and a prayer. It's kind of become the norm now, hasn't it? That events, World Championship, European Championship, local championships have their own radio service, and we started. I don't tend to shout about it much because that's not the kind of character I am. But I started World Rally Radio originally with when I worked for the late Greg Strange, and we trialled World Rally Radio for the World Championship in 2001, in Rally San Remo 2001 as a concept.
Wow.
And it was way back then. I mean, I'd been working on the WRC for other things from around about 1998, and so we started, we trialled it, and we used to produce World Rally Radio actually on location with the crew that are still doing it now, a fabulous bunch of guys, and we did everything on location at the time, and we took all the equipment to the event. But that was when the internet wasn't particularly good and very quick, But as things have gone on, it makes more sense to have a permanent studio, you know, a permanent location. But the key to making any live radio service work from any rally event is the recce beforehand. And we go round on the European Championship, we go round to every stage end and we physically check the connection back to the studio from every stage end. And if the signal doesn't work, then we find an alternative location to talk to the driver. So we make our own makeshift stop line, maybe at a passage control, a road junction, somewhere safe that we can stop the cars as they come towards us. But as things have sped up now, you know, internet connectivity is brilliant, so you can get live results. The ERC app is great because we can get more or less the times are on there. So even if we're not at the stop line, we know what's happening in the event. Sometimes we have live tracking with us as well on our iPads at the end of the stage, so we can see where the cars are before they come to talk to us. But yeah, it's all down to the recce and having a resilient technical team behind you, which is what we provide. And we don't shout about it too much, but that's what we do. And I've worked in radio radio since 1990, and I've specialised in outside broadcasts for the BBC and other commercial outlets as well as online radio services since then.
Wow. See, now I remember, and the reason why I was fascinated by this is because back in the day I was involved with amateur radio and stuff like that, and I remember James talking to me about stuff because we were kind of just talking about transmitters and things like that, and he was telling me a story about having an aircraft with a repeater, I think it was, on Rally Australia or something like that. Was it Rally Oz?
It was Rally New Zealand 2006, and this was absolutely pioneering broadcast that I don't want to trumpet myself too much, but I made that work. That was me. James was back in the studio in the UK, and what we did, we were in Hamilton in Rally New Zealand, the Mystery Creek Event Centre. We were with Bex and Colin and George Donaldson and all the faces down there, and we used an FM transmitter on top of the event centre, so we streamed World Rally Radio, broadcast it on an FM frequency, but using the WRC's repeater aircraft for the two-way radios, I managed to get a license with the, I can't remember them now, the sort of the equivalent of Ofcom in New Zealand, and we managed to get a frequency and put a transmitter in the aeroplane that was flying at about 22,000 feet above the rally circuit. And we chose New Zealand because it's in the middle of nowhere, because radio frequencies broadcast at that altitude absolutely travel for miles and miles and miles. And from up there at 22,000 feet, broadcasting, I think we were broadcasting at something like 1 or 2 watts. Which is geek term for how much power oomph you're putting out. We covered pretty much all of the North Island of New Zealand on FM, and we were broadcasting on something like 107.7 or something, and we had lots and lots of people listening on the ground in the stages, and we got round the sort of the geographical problems that you have when using a conventional ground-based transmitter. If you tried to do that in Europe, it just wouldn't work
because you get bleed over from all the other. Well, there's so many stages so close to one another, isn't it?
Yeah, and there's so many different countries, everyone will be moaning about 4,000 miles away. Why have we got rally radio coming out on where we should be?
Some taxi driver getting centre stage end. No intention of going there, but you think the meter's running, I've got good money in this, I'm going to go to that stage end.
yes, have a go with that.
You mentioned, the technology side of it, and again, we're all watching, we watch ERC and we watch some of the stuff now on motors, and we watch obviously what WRC are doing and things like that. Now the advent of drones being used, and drones being used properly, is something which I know you guys are heavily involved with now, and you're one of the few people, I guess, who've done it properly, you know, with licenses and stuff like that. Yes. How has the drone effect come into play for you?
Well, drones, I'm fascinated by technology. I always have been, on or off rally events. I absolutely love technology, and a new technology that's coming on the market and harnessing something new and applying it as a new idea. So we've done periscope streaming from start lines and qualifying and so on in the past. But Yeah, the drone stuff is brilliant. We produce videos for all sorts of people, corporate videos, this, that, and the other, rally videos for people who want to put stuff on their websites. And having a drone as an alternative camera solution is absolutely innovative. The drone market has exploded in the past 2 years. I've been flying a drone for just over 2 years now. And initially started out as a hobbyist, and have gone down the route, and we're fully licensed. Our company is fully licensed. We've gone through the training. We're actually licensed as an unmanned aircraft. Is the wow. Pilot's license you apply for. You have to do a lot of jumping through hoops to get that done. And as I currently look at the UK Civil Aviation Authority's website, there's only 1,916. People that are commercially licensed or companies that are commercially licensed to operate a drone for financial gain in the UK. So a lot of people could go out and buy a drone. Brilliant. I encourage people to go out and have a go with this new technology. But to physically make a living from it, you have to be licensed and have a permission for aerial work, which is granted by the UK CAA. And it costs about £2,500 to get your license, which is valid for 12 months. And drones are brilliant. They really are a brilliant piece of kit. We've seen the WRC. Using drones here, there, and everywhere. We're testing some equipment actually this week for Eurosport to bring on some innovative drone sort of camera angles for next year, if it works. But I just need to do a test with that in North Wales with our equipment this year. Drones are great if they're used correctly, and I've seen people who have flown them irresponsibly, should we say, at events, which makes you cringe. Absolutely makes you cringe. There's certain rules and regs that you need to stick to with drones, and I can bore you with them now if you wanted.
No, we don't do rules and regulations here.
No, don't blame me. But drones. Yeah, as I say, fabulous. The new drone that we've got now that we've just we've got two in our fleet at the company. The new one, it weighs about 3.5 kilograms, but it streams live footage to either YouTube, Facebook. You can Periscope live with it from provided you've got internet connection. So out in the stages now, if you wanted, you could stream most of a stage live, or at least a chunk of the stage live if you wanted, using the drone. The only problem with them is the battery life. You normally get about 20 minutes of flight time out of the drone. Bobby Willis earlier this year on the Circuit of Ireland, they were using drones. They were streaming on, we called it Bobby TV, but the Circuit of Ireland television channel, they use them. They're great, provided it's not raining or windy.
Yeah, other than that, they're fine. And you can never guarantee that on any rally, wind or rain, of course.
No,
but there you go. Chris.
Okay.
We could go on forever, but I'm conscious of the fact that we've got a busy old show this week, and as ever,
I'm hogging your airtime. It's taking me so long, you can't shut me up.
I know. Well, listen, the door's always open. I say this to everybody. There's no closed policy here. There's no elitism. When people want to come back, and to be fair, it's great because we have people. We do have people. Zav just turns up these days. He just minds his own business.
I must shameless plug if you don't mind. My company provides ERC radio from every round of the European Championship. We'll be live whenever a stage is live. But we're trying, actually, Zav and I and Tony Kelly, we're hooking up together to sort of rebrand our service for Ulster Rally Live or Radio. I'm not sure what it's called yet, but we're going to be live. Ulster Rally Radio, we'll call it, is live with John Mahal and Motors and the other backers that have made this service work from the Ulster Rally.
Wow.
Whenever it is, not next weekend, isn't it? Well, it depends when your podcast gets out.
The podcast will be going out this week, but no, we've got another couple of weeks yet before Ulster. It will be not this weekend, coming the weekend after is Ulster. So yes, and I'm not doing Ulster. Unfortunately, it was never part of our plan. In fact, the whole BRC was never part of our plan, but we ended up doing it anyway. But Ulster wasn't on our radar. But for me, I will be listening intently because because of championship points and me not being there and people in our class being there and everything else. So for me, it's a bit of a tense weekend for our championship. So I will find that invaluable.
Should be good. You'd be able to. Well, the thing with the radio service is that it knits everything together. It's great for the British Rally Championship to get the quotes from the drivers at the end of the stage. It helps everybody with the social media feed, the website news, and so on. So you know, big thanks to everyone who's made this project happen. It's been on the boil for a while, and we've got there in the end, and it's going to be a good weekend. Zav, I know, is certainly looking forward to it. Tony, so
he's getting very giddy.
He's more than giddy. So we'll have to calm him down a bit. I think sit him in a dark room before the first stage goes live. Just get him to breathe into a paper bag before we hit the stages.
Relax. There you go.
If it's possible.
Listen, mate, it's been a pleasure to have you on, and I genuinely, you're always welcome. And of course, yeah. Julesy comes on whenever he wants to come on, and to be fair, you've done really well. Last time I had Julesy on for 10 minutes, he did an hour and 10 minutes. So
that was about right for Julian.
You've done exceptionally well, but no, we will have a catch up soon. So thank you so much again.
No problem.
It's an absolute rally.
This is Absolute Rally. Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx, and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal, or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate. We can cater for individuals, teams, or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally, and classic touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers, and trucks, accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate. Call Dane or Donna now on 44 1904 766 787, or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
Welcome back to Absolute Rally. It's good to be back. As I say, we've just been listening, to Chris Rawls, who's been telling us all about how Rally Radio works. And we mentioned his colleague and that, and of course, friend of the show. I don't know whether he is friend of the show now. He's just kind of just bullies his way in. But Zav McCartan, welcome back to Absolute Rally.
Thank you very much for the invite this time. I do apologise for sort of suggesting I come on by social media the last time. I know my place in life.
It was like verbal ram raiding. I think that's the best way of putting it. But all the boys...
Only a man from Liverpool would know about that.
Well, you can take the boy out of the car. All the boys are here. We're all here. We've put the band back together. So we've got Jack, we've got Ryan, and we've got Zav, and we've got me. And we're going to do a little bit of a preview of Ulster. As I say, Ryan and I have both competed on it. I think the last time I did it was in 2012. When was the last time you were on it, right?
A long time ago. Now you come to mention it. 10 years ago, I think.
10 years? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so 2006. Okay.
2006. I think I probably did it about 10 times, but it was 10 years ago since I was last there, scarily enough.
Wow, there you go. And Jack obviously wrote about it.
I have. Wrote about it many, many years ago in this week's MN as well, in 1976. So I've gone back right to the start.
Wow, 1976. You weren't even around then, was you, Jack?
Come on, obviously I wasn't around in 1976.
No, of course you wasn't. And of course, Zav, you know, I'm a man of your calibre who's been around Irish tarmac rallying and setting up fan clubs for Jack Benyon and things like that for quite some time now. And your thoughts on the forthcoming Ulster Rally?
I need to go back to the fan club clip there, because of what I got a text from somebody within the MSA. launching that whole wheelbarrow will blame firmly at my door. And yes, it would be in my remit of things too, but I can't take the credit for that one, I don't think.
Right.
But that's something that Absolute Rally and Tour can discuss this weekend, because you'll be in Ulster, Jack, won't you?
I am, yes.
Yeah, you're there as well, Ryan, possibly, I think.
Well, yes, because you offered to buy beer, so, and that's the only reason Jack's coming as well.
Yeah. you're not... Are you there, Tony?
Unfortunately, no, I'm the only one that's not there, it seems. So, thank you for that.
The only man that can't be at his own party.
Yeah, I know, tell me about it, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
anyway.
The Ulster, I mean, the Jack there says 1976, you know, it started off at that time in and around, staged around Craigavon and ran through the night. Over the years, it has been a great, great event. You know, Belfast Telegraph came aboard back in those times and sponsored it. It ran in various formats prior to becoming the Ulster. It's a very unique event in that the stages. They've moved the rally around the province, but it is always demanded. It has run through the night before in previous incarnations of it. And I don't think it's going to be any different this year. We have the Ulster. As much as we love the ERC and love to have them come to visit, we don't have the politics, if you like, this time of entry fees and stuff. It's a straightforward seeding based on speed. And I think it is shaping up, you know, when you look back at the history of it with the likes of Walter Rowe coming here, Russell Brooks buying Melvin Hodgson an ice cream because of politics within GM Dealersport. It's going to be a great event this weekend.
Right. We've had a look around the entry list, and again, we mentioned him last week, and the one that I'm fascinated by is seeing Gary Jennings in this Mitsubishi.
Yeah,
go on, Zav.
No, go on ahead. I mean, that is a real feather in the cap for the organisers, for Spencer Sport. I mean, if you're going to put somebody into a car like that, that you want someone on tarmac, it's Gary Jennings that you would put into it. It's going to be a very, very interesting the end of the first stage on Friday, just to see what kind of times Gary puts in against the other runners, like against Alan and Josh Moffat, Desi Henry, those kind of people, you know.
Right. What do you think we can expect? Obviously, you know, we know the cars had quite a lot of money put into it, but by the same token, you know, we're talking about going up against factory R5 cars.
Yeah, and I guess most of its development's been done on gravel so far as well. So, as I've said, I mean, Gary's a great yardstick to put in it. He will drive the wheels off it, maybe quite literally, but it will be travelling as quick as it'll go. I think we're unlikely to see it on the very front running pace. But having said that, Gary will extract the maximum from it. But you know, if we could get around the top five, top six, I think that's probably realistic. But let's see.
Jack, who are your runners and riders? Who are you predicting? Because obviously we've got the main field, we've got the R5s and everything else. Then we've got the junior section. Where do you see where do you see the winners?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? You know, just to add to Gary, I know Gary's driving a brand new Mitsubishi that's got updates as well, coming from Sweden. So it's not a Mitsubishi we've seen before, and it's definitely got a few trick bits that have been put on ready for this event. So they're going hard for the event, and you know, like Ryan said, Gary's the man to extract the pace from it. But my runners and riders, you know, it's difficult to look past Elvin Evans. You know, it sounds a bit boring for me to say, but you know, when we come to the end of Saturday night, if he's not had a problem, then I think it's hard to look past him. His pace on the Circuit of Ireland was absolutely staggering, and you know, I think he would have really given Mr. Breen a run for his money if he'd managed to stay in the event. If you look at stage times after he came back, he was right there, very, very close to Craig's time. So he'll be the one to watch at the front, I think. The Irish Tarmac guys, obviously Keith Cronin's coming back to the BRC this weekend, but obviously the event's part of the Irish Tarmac Championship, so he'd be running that anyway. So Keith's an interesting one to watch. And then, you know, if you move a bit further down the order, Rob Duggan's one everyone's wanted to see. He'll be playing his Joker card for the BRC, so he'll be doubling his points. And if he wins, he'll win the Junior Championship in the same way that Elvin Evans will win the BRC if he wins the event. So lots of championships to be decided BRC wise. Irish Tarmac's going to take a lot more, and it's going to go down to the last round in Cork because the points are so close of Alistair Fisher and Sam Moffat with Keith just behind. So it's going to be an interesting event.
Right, we always talk about unique rallies and everything else, and everyone's got its own unique story. Ulster for you, you know, to me, it's bumpy, it's nasty, it's, you know, at times it's twisty, you know, the weather and everything, all those things can come into play. But looking at the weather at the moment, it looks like it's going to be Scorchio. And I just as I say, for me, it's a funny old event, because it's a bit like Isle of Man, I guess, where you can have almost microclimates as well. When I've done it, where, you know, you can have, you know, damp, and you know, last time I did it, for instance, it was so hot the tarmac was actually lifting off the road, and it was almost like a gravel, you had this kind of layer of gravel on the top of it because it was actually heating up, and it was turning into ball bearings.
Yeah, absolutely. I've seen that happen a couple of times on the Ulster Rally, actually, where where the tarmac does literally melt, and like you say, it ends up almost like a gravel rally. Likewise, I've seen the Ulster Rally be very, very wet. And I guess one thing that is different with the Ulster Rally to maybe some of the other rallies, like the Manx. Obviously, the Manx Rally tends to be similar stages year in, year out. Whereas the Ulster Rally has very much moved around Ulster, from South Armagh to Antrim up to Londonderry, from Belfast over many years as well. But it really has, originally it was a real lap of Ulster, so you had quite a mix of stages, and then, and then latterly it's concentrated on a smaller area. So the character of the rally can change year to year depending where it's based, but one thing that Ulster's always been quite tricky for is mud. If there is any wet weather, then the stages run through farmland, and there's a lot of grass verges at the side of the road. And we've talked about corner cutting earlier in the year on Ypres Rally. It wouldn't be that the corner cutting is so critical, but the mud drags on the stages from that corner cutting. You get a lot of animals on the road on the Ulster Rally as well, on the narrow sections with the cows crossing the road into the fields, etc. And if it is muddy, it is incredibly slippery. But like you said, at the minute the weather's looking good, so it could be drying fast.
Very tactfully put, calling it mud there. Zav, for our Absolute Rally listeners, how can they tune in and listen to your fantastic coverage with Chris Rawls and Tony Kelly on Ulster Rally this coming weekend?
It's going to be, there'll be a link available on the BRC website, the Tarmac Championship website, as well as the Ulster Rally website, all very easily found. Myself and Chris and Tony will tweet out links of how people can listen directly off their Android or their iPhone. One other thing that before I shoot off, it's funny, I had a guest on last week, and I'm actually parked probably about 5 miles from where he lived. I'm not that far away from Dungannon right now. But in the past couple of years, we've had the odd surprise. With John Armstrong, if you remember, set since 11 times in an R2, there's always the odd surprise. Rob Duggan is liable to go very well. And again, it's a great, great entry for this weekend.
Yeah, no, as I say, I genuinely can't wait. I'm so glad we've got the radio coverage that we can tune into it. But folks, we are at the end now of probably the scattiest Absolute Rally that I've had to kind of put together for quite some time. The only time it was this scatty is when I was in a radio studio in Manchester and nothing worked. But still, there you go. We kind of made it work with having so many people all on at the same time. But as I say, thank you so much for the download, folks. As I say, it was always going to be a slight anti-climax, although we did put another Irishman on, albeit Zav McCartan. So we've had three Irishmen in 3 weeks. So that was about as best as what we could get this time round, but there you go. Jack, same time, same place next week?
Absolutely. I'm sure we'll have some good stories to bring back from the Ulster for you.
I can't wait. Ryan?
Yeah, we're going to tell you all about the beer that Zav bought.
Fantastic. And of course, Zav, not same time, same place for you next week, but you constantly warm our substitutes bench waiting for that opportunity.
No, it's okay. I'll do a social media thing again. Just tell you when I'm coming on. It's probably not easier.
Thanks a lot.
All right, guys, we'll see you at the Absolute Rally on tour at the weekend. Tony, we'll send you a postcard.
Yeah, send us some pictures. Folks, you know where we live, Absolute_RallyCourse on Twitter. And if you want to get us involved on Facebook, you can do it on facebook.com/Absolute Rally. I really appreciate the download. I don't like being mocked on my own podcast, so now it's time to go. Folks, appreciate the download. We'll be back next week.